much can you say in 1 minute? The questions are from our sponsor organizations. They have been provided to the candidates in advance. Candidates will have 1 minute for openings and closings. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question. If you wish to have rebuttal, you'll need to do it in your closing. We will use alphabetical order and rotate by district. At this time, I'll call the candidates up with a very brief introduction, and as Debbie pointed out, there's a more complete bio provided by the candidates at your tables. District 2, Stephen Ray Baca. Mr. Baca is a fifth-generation North Valley resident. He has a degree in psychology and a certificate in criminal investigation. Mr. Baca is an independent contractor in the legal field. Mr. Baca? Isaac Benton. An architect, Councillor Benton is serving his fourth term on the Albuquerque City Council. He is a proponent of infill development and spearheaded the purchases and master plan oversight for the historic Albuquerque Rail Yards and El Vado Motel. Councillor Benton? Lynn, is Mr. Griego with us? Mr. Griego is not with us today. Robert Nelson. Mr. Nelson is a Filipino immigrant with over 10 years' experience in the local nonprofit sector. Through his work at Heading Home, he has helped transition homeless people to permanent housing. Mr. Nelson? Zachary Quintero. Mr. Quintero is a fourth-generation New Mexican and a graduate of the UNM Law School. He has worked as an economic analyst in Santa Fe and has worked for the State Department on International Trade. He serves on the City County Air Quality Control Board. Mr. Quintero? And our final candidate in District 2, Connie Vigil. Ms. Vigil is a St. Mary's, Highland High, and New Mexico Tech graduate and has worked as a research assistant at the UNM Cancer Center. She is a former Wells Park Neighborhood Association president and founded a group with the goal of getting the city to address needle and trash problems. Ms. Vigil? District 4, Brooke Bassan. Ms. Bassan is from a local family small business owners, including Capo's Italian Restaurant. She has a BA in criminal justice from the University of New Mexico. Mother of four, she has served both as PTA president and a board member of her neighborhood association. Ms. Bassan? Athena Christodoulou. Ms. Christodoulou is a retired Navy engineer with both civil and environmental engineering degrees. She is president of the New Mexico Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit promoting renewable energy and sustainability. Anne Romero. Ms. Romero is a New Mexico native who serves as deputy legislative director for Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. She works with APD on public safety issues as a member of the Albuquerque Northeast Policing Council. District 6, Pat Davis. Councillor Davis is a community organizer and former police officer. He was elected to represent the district in 2015. His focus includes smart policing, funding new tools to help APD track gun offenders, and restoring neighborhood bike patrols. Also from District 2, Gina Naomi Dennis. Ms. Dennis earned her law degree in 2003 and a master's in business administration in 2005. She also has a BA in psychology and political science and serves as president of the District 6 Coalition, including 17 neighborhoods. District 8, Trudy Jones. Councillor Jones was first elected to the council in 2007 and is serving her third term. She is a strong supporter of business and job creation and has sponsored legislation such as the Comprehensive Plan and IDO. She had a successful 30-year career in real estate. Our last candidate, Maureen Scowron. Ms. Scowron served in the Marine Corps, including an assignment with the Presidential Helicopter Squadron. She is a graduate of both CNM and UNM and currently serves as a data analyst at UNM's Geospatial and Population Studies Department. Welcome. Welcome to all the candidates, and thank you very much for agreeing to participate today. We'll now move to opening statements, beginning with District 2, Mr. Baca.
All right, good evening, or good afternoon. My name is Stephen Baca, born and raised in the North Valley, fifth generation North Valley resident, third generation Valley High School resident. I'm running because I want to keep the North Valley area. I want to make sure the small businesses in that area are taken care of and make it a prosperous area. I want to keep the North Valley, keep its rural nature, but at the same time, make sure business is able to prosper. Thank you.
Councilor Benton.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks to Kent for moderating. We have our challenges, but Albuquerque's future is promising. We can make the city one that's better for all neighborhoods, make us all safer, see big projects like the rail yards develop, and make Albuquerque a place that's more equitable and sustainable, the most sustainable city in the Southwest. A city's only good as its urban center and its surrounding neighborhoods. I know our community well. I've raised a family, operated a business in District 2, and lived there my whole adult life. The effective and strong leadership of the City Council is so important to our city. It's the equal branch to the executive, and I feel like I've worked well and been a strong leader on the council over the years. I believe in quality, urban vitality, and economic development projects like the rail yards that were mentioned. And although I listen and do my best work collaboratively with my colleagues on the council, ultimately I'm beholden to no one except the constituents of District 2.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, NAOP, for having the opportunity to speak with all of you today. Thank you, Mr. Walls, for moderating. Big thanks to Lynn and John for inviting me. I really appreciate the chance to talk. I'm Robert Blanqueta Nelson. I'm a Filipino immigrant. I've worked here in Albuquerque in the nonprofit sector for over 10 years, predominantly in housing and homeless services. But now I work at a place called the Grants Collective. I work to attract and obtain federal and national investments back to our city and state so that nonprofits can meet their mission and serve the people most in need. Over the last 3 years, I've helped raise $9.5 million for nonprofits to go do the most important work in our communities, whether it's housing our homeless, feeding our hungry, getting people to access education and healthcare, and all the good stuff. I'm running for city council because we have a lot of public health issues in our city. I'm running to reduce homelessness through affordable housing, increasing access to capacity for social services like mental health and substance use, and also working to strengthen our community voice, because I know that a lot of folks have a hard time getting access to their, getting participation into our city. And so we need to strengthen our democracy as much as possible. Thank you.
Ms. Vigil. Excuse me, Mr. Quintero, sorry.
Thank you. Happy Monday, everybody. My name is Zachary Quintero. I'm a proud fourth generation New Mexican, and I'm here to earn your vote to become your next city councilor for District 2. I'm a proud New Mexican. My mom's an educator, I'm a teacher, and my dad's a plumber, so I know how to listen well and I know how to deal with crap. And I hear that's kind of what you need. You need some moxie to be in politics, especially in local politics. I'm running because the last 10 years of what we have isn't where we deserve to be. I'm running because I'm tired of seeing my best friends and family members leave Albuquerque, leave New Mexico. I'm tired of waking up to stories of hearing people, you know, being stabbed downtown or being assaulted. I'm running because I believe we need a nerd that is passionate, and I would be the only economist on city council, and I'm a proud graduate of UNM Law. I hope to earn your support, and I hope to make this city inclusive for everyone.
Ms. Vigil.
Zach's always a hard act to follow. Hi, I'm Connie Vigil. I am running not because I had to run, I'm running because I was nominated. I was nominated and asked by several legislators to run. I'm also running because I grew up in Albuquerque and I have a passion for this city. I've lived in five other states, including Idaho, Indiana, Oregon, Alaska, Vermont, and one other, I can't think. Anyway, but all of those cities, living in all of those cities, especially Boise, Idaho, where I was a city councilor in a small town outside of Boise, I learned a lot of things. I learned how to bring communities together, and that's why I formed GABA. After this meeting today, because of my meeting with Tim Keller last week, we'll be meeting on a homeless campus that people in this room helped to support. Bohannon Houston, Ron Bernstein, we're all working on a campus, and I want to tell you that I'm a doer, not a sitter. I'm a New Mexico Tech grad and UNM grad. So thank you for your support.
Thank you. Lynn would like
okay,
a mic.
Okay, there. I'm sorry, I apologize, but the audio guys say, please don't stand up. It screws up the mics. So.
Well, thanks for letting us know now. Before we move to District 4, Kendra has a tough job here as a timekeeper, and she's going to bang that bell even louder. I know that 1 minute is really difficult. It's a little bit like political speed dating in front of 500 people. But if we have a little flex time at the end, Lynn will give me a sign, and maybe we can expand our closings to a little bit to 2 minutes. Is that good, Lynn? Okay. Moving on to District 4 for openings, Ms. Bassan.
Hello. It's important you all understand I was born and raised in Albuquerque. I've never left, and I've lived and worked in many different areas, including the North Valley, downtown, the university area, and for the last 6 years in District 4. As a mother, I became involved in municipal government purely by accident, by striving to improve the safety and infrastructure of my neighborhood. Crime in Albuquerque has risen to alarming levels, and no one should accept this as our normal. Police force has been decimated by a low number of underpaid officers, and we need to work hard to make sure to effectively enforce our laws. Albuquerque cannot possibly hope to create a thriving business community that promotes the creation of high-paying jobs in an environment of homelessness, drug addiction, and mental illness. We have to protect our citizens by creating a city that works for everyone. I will build coalitions and provide common sense legislation focusing on the needs of all the Albuquerque stakeholders.
Ms. Christodoulou.
60 minutes, 1 hour. That's how long it takes for enough energy to reach us from the sun to power all of humanity's needs. Not for one day or even 1 week, but an entire year. We have what we need arriving daily, like manna from heaven. Scientists know this fact, and they've also told us that we have less than 12 years to stop burning dead, fossilized sunshine, or we face an unlivable planet. Hello, my name is Athena Christodoulou, retired Navy engineer and scientist, wife and mother of three, and entrepreneur. I am running for City Council District 4 in the very real, very pressing platform that I want to enrich our lives while preserving the future. And united, we will. I have served my country, my family, and now I'm ready to serve you, Albuquerque.
Thank you. Ms. Romero.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anne Romero, and I'm proudly running for City Council in District 4. My background has been dedicated to a lifelong service working in policy, and I specialize in behavioral health. And when I look at the serious crime and homeless issues that are impacting our community, this is work that I have already been working on extensively. As a member of the Northeast Policing Council for the past 2 years, I have been working directly with APD to address some of our community's more serious crime issues. And I want to continue to help small businesses grow and thrive so we can continue to keep jobs here in New Mexico and keep New Mexicans right here at home where they belong. And thirdly, I want to continue to expand on our education services with the city and with APS schools. My husband is an educator with APS schools, and I'm a proud daughter of both educators as well. So working together as a collective body and in our community, We can solve the solutions. No one else knows how to solve Albuquerque solutions like we do. So again, Ana Romero running for City Council in District 4. Thank you.
District 6, Councilor Davis.
I'm here. Do you want to switch or?
Davis?
Davis,
Dennis, right?
We can swap. We can do it. We can do this.
Okay.
It's alphabet is a test of getting elected, and sometimes it's not always great. You know, 4 years ago when we were here, our city was absolutely on the wrong track, right? We had lost more police officers than we had a capacity to gain. The DOJ had just taken over our police department, and we really hadn't seen any big job announcements in several months. I'm here today to say that we have a whole lot more work to do, but so far we're on the right track. Just in the last year, we hired 100 new police officers, putting us back over 1,000 officers for the first time in 6 years. Property crime is down in some cases 40%, while the jail population is not increased, showing the progress and the potential of our partnerships with the county, for example, on behavioral health alternatives and working to address those root causes that are actually having an impact. And Councilor Benton and I led the city council to add $1 million to new policing on Central, $500,000 in small business marketing. And now we see, just we heard Titan a minute ago talking about 300 new units coming to Nob Hill and Central Avenue just in the last year or so. I think we have Albuquerque back on the right track. And I think by the end of the day, I hope you'll agree that we ought to keep our team together just a little while longer to help finish that job.
Ms. Dennis.
I'm Gina Naomi Dennis. I'm running in District 6, City Council District 6. I'm an attorney. I've been a lawyer for 15 years. I worked at the 10th largest law firm in the world in Washington, D.C. I managed an $800 million acquisition of the Chrysler Building. I've worked in the White House. I was Bill Clinton's intern in the White House in 1999. And I've managed multiple transactions, budgets. I've represented 7 Pueblo governments as a tribal attorney in New Mexico. I'm running because I not only have the intellect, the credentials, and the experience, but the community has asked me to run. For the last 4 years, I've been organizing our Albuquerque neighborhoods. We have 17 neighborhoods in City Council District 6. I've been the coalition leader of 17 neighborhoods, fighting to improve community safety, addressing underlying issues of addiction, because 80 to 85% of our crimes are committed while someone is high or trying to get high on opioids. Thank you.
Moving to District 8, Councilor Jones.
Thank you. I am pleased to be here and honored to have served for three terms in the City Council. I think most of you know who I am and what I have and what I've been. I was a business person. I came to Albuquerque with nothing because Albuquerque is such a welcoming and cohesive and wonderful city. I was able to have some successes in life, and I chose to start giving back. And my way of giving back is by being in City Council and doing the best I can for my district and for all of the city. We have done wonderful things in District 8 with facilities that were in need at best, non-existing in some areas. And now we are doing our best and have in the last few years helping the other districts get the facilities, the roads, and what we need. We must fix crime. There are ways to fix crime. One of them is through homelessness, education, and taking care of the people. We need to find another way, and we need to enforce our laws so the police can do what they need to do. Thank you.
Ms. Scowen.
Thank you, Kent. As a young child, I had a serious bone disease. I overcame that with help from my family. My mom told me many times while I'm growing up, you can do anything if you want to bad enough. That can-do attitude was further fostered in the Marine Corps, where I served for 12 years, starting with avionics in the Presidential Helicopter Squadron. More recently, I moved here in 2009. Since then, I got involved in a few organizations, and this year, I decided to take my desire to serve to City Hall. With a can-do attitude, the city can accomplish great things.
Thank you. We'll move to our first question from the sponsor organizations. According to the Pew Charitable Trust, less than 1% of all cities have enacted paid sick leave mandates. 22 states have passed preemption laws barring individual municipalities from mandating paid sick leave, citing a confusing patchwork of leave laws and ordinances. Some city councilors are prepared to pass this kind of ordinance even though a paid sick leave ballot initiative was rejected by voters. Do you believe the city should enact a paid sick leave mandate? Why or why not? And we start with District 4, Ms. Bassan.
Being born a third generation Albuquerque native of a family of small local business owners, I can tell you most, if not all, small businesses value their hardworking employees. These business owners make every effort to support, incentivize, and provide all possible benefits and opportunities for the very people who they depend on to help keep their company growing and successful. Mandating paid sick leave is something that most small businesses cannot afford to offer without causing potential detrimental impacts or even bankruptcy. There's something to be said about hard work in an entry-level position. Yes, we all need to value one another and respect emergency and medical needs that arise on occasion, but we need to make sure to do this in a way that is not creating a new burden on others who have pride and are hardworking and provide a service in the form of their business.
Ms. Krista Dulu.
When I was a stay-at-home mom, I sure would have loved paid sick leave. Heck, forget the pay, just let me leave. But when I had my cafe, sick workers were sent home. It was a health issue for everyone, but I made sure their wages were high enough and offered them make-up time. I operated under a triple bottom line philosophy: people, including my employees, planet, and profit. Why be in business otherwise? New Mexico already suffers from a lack of small businesses. However, many large entities take advantage of part-time employees, and it would help our city if we held them responsible. I used to also work in retail. No one trying to make a living in that industry will. So across the board, no. But it should be considered based on situation.
Ms. Romero.
The reality is that we have businesses in our community who strongly care about their employees. And the unfortunate reality is that sometimes people are going to get sick. And so we shouldn't have to make a choice and divide between businesses and workers. My role as City Council in District 4 is going to be to unite both the business community and the workforce to come up with solutions, policy-based solutions that are going to work to help to strengthen these policies to ensure that we're supporting businesses and also ensuring that we have a healthy workforce. And I'm also interested in seeing the outcome of the impact study that Councilors Benton and Davis are putting together. That will actually help us to create a solution for the path forward and how we can unify and come to yes together.
Thank you. District 6, Councilor Davis.
Thanks, Kent. You know, I suspect most of us sitting in this room have some access to some kind of paid leave. And for the business owners that I know in this room, I think almost all of them offer this to their employees. And that's because most major New Mexico companies, leading New Mexico companies, do that. But this is a conversation about the folks at the lower end of our workforce, the folks that serve our enchiladas or take care of your kids in daycare. And not all of them do have that advantage. The way I see it, the rules that we have now, like minimum wage and workers' comp, apply equally to everybody, and even though they're hard to deal with for some of us, quite frankly, it's easier when they apply across the board and we don't pick winners and losers. My concern is that politicians, like us, sit up here and create an arbitrary rule that opts some in and opt out and gives some an advantage over others. I believe everybody deserves to have an ability to access leave for emergencies. And quite frankly, you know, we also have to be pragmatic. No one's surprised that I asked for a fiscal study because I think the county version is close to what I'd like to see, and I want to see what that would look like in the city. But until we find that a way to district Knob Hill and Tanawan into the same city council district, nobody who lives in my neighborhood can get elected without supporting those issues. And so we're going to continue to lead on that and work with folks until we can find a compromise.
Ms. Dennis.
Hi, Gina Naomi Dennis, District 6. I grew up in Washington, D.C. My father is a brain surgeon, a neurosurgeon, and every day I watched him go to work at a public hospital that had very little funding. He couldn't get sick, and there were days and weeks and months that he was not compensated. He performed surgery for free. This is not just a working class issue. This is an everybody issue. I've been a small business owner. I know what it's like. I know that all of our employers want to have a workforce, and we can't punish people for getting sick. I think we can do this together, employees and business owners alike. I support paid sick leave.
District 8, Councilor Jones.
Thank you. I do not support a citywide paid sick leave. I believe there's going to be a... If there's a sick leave in our, it should be in our state, and we should all be equal. We cannot pit city against city. We need to be very careful about what we do. I am confident something will happen, but I do not believe it is something that should happen without going to the voters. We are the ones who are paying the price. We are the ones who work. We are the ones who hire people. We should have something to say about this. And unfortunately, when we politicians make those decisions, sometimes the citizens who have to pay the price aren't involved in the conversation. So, no, I do not support a city paid sick leave.
Ms. Scowron.
I do support a city mandate for paid sick leave. For one thing, I don't want sick workers coughing on my pizza. And nobody should be forced to choose between that and losing pay. The city should work with the county, since the county has a new ordinance for paid time off, so we consider aligning ourselves. But I am open to compromise. One option would be a 90-day probationary period where workers qualify. The best asset of a business is its employees. Paid sick leave will keep them productive, benefiting business in the long run.
Thank you. District 2, Mr. Baca.
Good afternoon. My position on the paid sick leave is an absolute hell no to supporting it. Only in Albuquerque do we have politicians that create government regulations, micromanage business, essentially regulate their tax base out of existence, and then complain that the city has no money from their tax base. Only in Albuquerque does this happen. This is completely ridiculous. Albuquerque needs to stop micromanaging businesses, and we need to allow business to prosper. We already have a handicapped small business community that has to deal with state regulations, local regulations, and New Mexico in general is one of the worst places to start a business. We need to reduce regulations and allow businesses to prosper, dictate the destiny of their own employees and dictate their own destiny.
Councilor Benton.
As a small business owner downtown for 18 years with 6 to 8 employees, I saw my employees as the backbone of our ability to compete against large companies. The big architecture firm had the glamorous jobs and a nicer office and sometimes better pay. But it was critical to me to compete, recruit, and retain our employees to have paid sick leave and offer it. And have it be earned after a reasonable time of working for us. Flexible schedules and understanding their family needs was what made my employees happy and made me successful over the years. Without them, I couldn't have done it. And I think part of just being in business, large or small, is taking care of your workers and their families. And we are not preempted by the state. The county has passed their ordinance. And I believe we should pass an ordinance that's in line with the counties and move forward as a biggest community in the state.
Mr. Nelson.
Thank you. I support paid sick leave. Having worked in homelessness services for a long time, I know of the choices working families have had to make between taking their kids to school or missing a day of work if their kids are sick, or making tough choices between their groceries and paying rent, and not being able to stay home because they were sick. And so for me, it's about taking care of our working families and making sure, but it's also critical that we include you as business owners and small businesses into the conversation. That's what it means to strengthen community voice. It means having an equitable conversation so that everyone can benefit.
Quintero.
Great, so econ question. I'm very excited to talk about this because I feel what the county did was the correct step in moving forward for the conversation for city government, actually. So when we look at District 2, we have an income disparity of $15,000 per household to $250,000 per household. I want you to think about that for a second and think about the people that are working 2 to 3 jobs each day, people who are like my grandmother, and ask yourself if they had this opportunity to be able to try to build themselves up and build their own restaurant, would they be able to do it without this kind of structural support? The answer is no. I think we can be able to have this without a top-down approach. We got to build it up block by block through our neighborhoods, through our family-owned businesses that provide certainty for businesses and also confidence for our workers. I think an open dialogue is needed here, but we need new leadership and experience and background in that, and that's what I'm offering.
Ms. V. Hill.
Remember, I'm the scientist, so I'm over-analytical. I'm going to talk super fast. How many of you know of 45S? IRS last year gave credit, tax credit, to businesses that voluntarily gave paid leave. I support Lynn. I support NAOP. When no means no, Debbie and Maggie should not be pushing it through on the county end. Pat and Ike are going up for re-election. They want something that's popular. Guess what, guys? The state of Oregon, we need to put this to the state level. Because at that level, we can get the federal tax breaks. And I even took it a step further. I called Heinrich's office, okay? He is the sponsor of a bill. And that bill, and I'll read it real quick because I'm almost out of time. It says, he is a proud co-sponsor of the Family Act bill that would provide up to 66% replacement of income, and it makes paid leave affordable for businesses of all sizes. Why doesn't city council, county commissioner, leave that to our elected federal officials and our state level so that it can be across the board fair and it won't be a burden in the county or the city? When people say no, it means no. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to our next question, and this one will start with answers from District 6. Clear and consistent building and energy code requirements ensure public safety. But a patchwork of inconsistent and untested codes adds significant costs to building owners and homebuyers. These higher costs impede economic development and make us less competitive in attracting jobs and keeping residents. Will you support the city keeping its building and energy codes aligned with statewide policies? Will you oppose adopting codes that are not already broadly adopted in other cities and states that compete with Albuquerque for jobs and economic growth? Councilor Davis.
Thanks, Kent. You know, it's not a well-kept secret that the new administration in Santa Fe is looking at the statewide energy codes. Lots of speculation. Lynn and I have talked about this at some length, that they're looking not just at something like 2018, but even looking ahead at the 2021 codes that are coming down very quickly. And so I think it's clear that we're going to be updating our codes. Councilor Benton and I have introduced legislation to update us to 18 and working through the Energy Council in the city. But I think there's a reason for us to have this conversation. We should align with the state. It makes more sense for us to do that. But I think it's clear that this mayor and this new governor are going to update our codes. No one's surprised that I might support that. You know, Councilor Benton and I updated or passed our first renewable energy standard. We put $12 million in solar on city buildings, freeing up $3 million for policing and homeless service without raising taxes. You know, clean energy is the way the city of Albuquerque is going. It makes sense for most new developments now. As you all know, many tenants are now demanding some clean energy solutions. And I think 2018 is a common sense, middle of the road approach between the proposals in Santa Fe and here.
Ms. Dennis.
Hi, Gina Naomi Dennis, District 6. I have been a green building consultant. I operated a green building consulting company for 8 years. I'm also a LEED accredited professional, which is a designation that a lot of architects and engineers also have. And I've worked directly inside of the construction industry. I see the value of clean energy codes as long as we get the public input that we need from our building industry. I've spent time in Brazil, China, and East Africa, South Sudan, talking about clean energy codes, construction that's clean, and I think it's the right thing to do. I think sustainability should be at the top of our list when we think about our future and our present, and it's important that we get people trained in that. Thank you.
District 8, Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Kent. I believe that occasionally we in the state and the city and the county become a little overzealous in what we're doing. I think this is something that should be discussed, and we should listen to the people who are doing this, who are building, doing the construction in our city and in the state, and see what really works. Do we need to update? Yes, we do. We update along with the rest of the country. We want to go along, but we don't want to just give in and do something that we don't think is right for us. So to do a blanket approval of a new energy code, not at this time, without a lot more information and some buy-in from the people who have to do this and who have to pay the price to buy the homes and the businesses that are served by this. Thank you.
Ms. Gowron?
I favor building codes that keep us competitive among peer cities. The current code used by the city is the 2015 International Building Code, but technology changes rapidly. We need to be on at most a 6-year cycle, if not a 3-year cycle. Property owners are concerned with operating costs, not just costs to buy, and we should be too. We need to build for a lower energy use and lower carbon footprint. According to the Environmental Energy Study Institute, jurisdictions enforcing current codes demonstrate that they are forward-thinking and open to change that improves lives.
District 2, Mr. Baca.
The codes in general need to be as simple, easy, and safe for builders to use. There's no need for erroneous regulations. The codes need to be as small as possible, as long as they provide a safe place to reside, live, do business. The codes need to be as small and as not obnoxious as possible. Thank you.
Councilor Benton.
So I've worked with codes my whole professional career, and buildings are the highest user of energy and the highest contributor to carbon and climate change. And we are in a climate emergency, and we need to protect our grandchildren from what's coming. So to sit around here with the 2009 energy code, or to even talk about an inferior 2015 energy code instead of moving to the most up-to-date International Building Code, not a patchwork. The International Building Code system is not a patchwork, but a format for all cities and states. And the 2018 is the most commonly code being adopted today by municipalities and states. We can lead the way as Albuquerque in this. As was said, it's about technical advancement. It's also about resilience of our community and community costs and cost savings for the consumer. As climate gets hotter, we need better buildings, and there's no point in starting behind with the 2015 code.
Mr. Nelson.
Yes, I support aligning with the state on the codes. I think we have a lot of challenges facing us with climate change happening. It's right at our doorstep, and we have to be able to compete internationally and become a leader as New Mexicans across the globe in terms of renewable energy and building codes.
Mr. Quintero.
Thank you. So this is where I think somebody with legal professional experience would be really valuable. Codes are a sign of priorities for cities. Codes provide the foundation for certainty on whether or not you're going to be able to open that new branch or be able to start your new business. In this specific part, I want to make sure that we have collective input, especially in the downtown area, from the neighbors and from our businesses there that want to be able to show the power that we have as a metro center. And the first step of that is making sure that we have a comprehensive survey and upgrade our government for it to be user-friendly. You should be able to have streamlined services when you're trying to do build-outs. There should be an app directly connecting you in real time to somebody in the permitting and planning process if you have a question. The way that we get through this together is by guiding it through technology and modernizing our government.
Ms. Vigil.
Again, I'm going to have some references. According to the Building Permit Guide for Residential Construction, looks like an attorney wrote it. Very, very difficult to read. I'd like to see all of our codes streamlined and user-friendly. Secondarily, National Building Code Assessment Report, Building Code for 2019, gives New Mexico overall a class of 47 on the commercial side and 44 on the residential. Comparing to Colorado, 62-59, Utah 78-74, Texas 55-51. A key factor in New Mexico seems to be lack of staff in New Mexico, as the average population served by building code enforcement departments. The money put into the training of those people in those departments is critical, and also helping them to help the builders to get the job done. So I'd like to say also, shout out, we did get an LEED certification of 25th in the nation. So we're doing something right in terms of energy code. So I think we're going in the right direction there. Thank you.
District 4, Ms. Bassan.
Consistency streamlines and organizes most things. It simplifies and makes development in particular more manageable, fair, and profitable. In order to create an economy that thrives, we must have development to increase competitive high-paying jobs, tourism, economic profit, and sustainability. I plan on supporting building and energy codes that make sense and believe those that align with statewide policies will be likely to do so. Although I do not think it's acceptable to adopt policy just because it's popular, I do believe that we have to be competitive and responsible in order to attract jobs and keep our residents. We need to be the place everyone wants to visit and live. This means evaluating tried and true codes that support our city's needs and benefit not only the developer, but also the residents and the consumers throughout Albuquerque.
In the nuclear Navy, I taught my students that the codes were written in someone else's blood. Most codes are written with safety in mind. However, not so the energy codes. That's not true. They now keep us from overusing fossil fuels for comfort. But let's get real. The energy codes don't really matter much when new construction isn't the real problem, and our electricity is on track to being clean, and while we desperately need to stop using natural gas or face an unlivable planet. Instead, let's enact a citywide Energy Star program for buildings. Combined with key energy legislation, that would spur economic development, gain national attention, and give us a beautiful, thriving Berkey.
Ms. Romero.
So we have to actually look at the opportunities that are available for businesses and for developers to build into the sector. We have the sustainable building tax credits. How have we educated our builders on these opportunities for them to take advantage of these of this? And also, we're operating off of 2009 codes. I actually read the ordinance that was passed suggesting for 2015 codes, and that although that's not my sector, I do believe that it's imperative that whoever represents City Council District 4 is well informed on these issues. The bare minimum standards do not always equal quality or safety, and while the costs may be low at the beginning, those costs are going to increase at the end and pass down to those consumers, which is my constituents. Energy waste is also the most expensive consequence of older buildings, and public health for indoor quality air is also critically important. So the car analogy that I pass to folks is that if you had a gas-guzzling car, wouldn't you want it to be a more fuel-efficient vehicle? The same thing for our buildings.
Thank you. We'll move to our next question, which will begin with District 8. According to studies commissioned by the U.S. Small Business Administration and National Association of Manufacturers, small businesses of 50 employees or less face annual regulatory costs that is 30% higher than large corporations. Small businesses also pay three times as much to comply with tax laws when compared to large corporations. Additionally, small business costs continue to rise as a result of minimum wage increases, gross receipts tax increases, and looming paid sick leave mandate. What economic development programs, incentives, or regulations should we change or employ so that City Council can help, not hurt, job growth and business expansion? Councilor Jones?
There are many things we should change. I'm not sure whether we can or will. But I think one of the things we need to remember as a city is this city was built on small business. Our city thrives on small business. We seem to think that the only business that we want to have in our city are the ones that we can do a press conference on and bring in a big company from out of state who's going to hire people and, as some of them have done, not last very long. I believe we indeed need to look at our small businesses and the costs that we have put on their shoulders. When we pass the plastic legislation, remember it was the small business people who are going to pay the biggest price, the mom and pops with three or four employees or two employees who now have to go out and buy more expensive papers and products. We need to be very careful. We don't need to follow the fads, and I know it's a changing world, but but occasionally we need to step back and use some common sense and say, what is right? Do we need to pass more legislation? In my opinion, we never need to pass more legislation. Let's kind of hold it back and do what's right.
Ms. Scowron.
I agree with Councillor Jones on one aspect, which is that bribing big businesses is not the way to grow our economy. According to the Small Business Administration, businesses with fewer than 100 employees represent 40% of the state's workforce. Now, the city already has a number of programs to benefit small businesses, such as incubators, accelerators, purchasing preference, and worker training programs. I support continuing all those. Another way we can further support growth is with an adaptive reuse program. This would streamline the regulatory process and lower fees to retrofit certain older buildings, thus making more space for small businesses.
Thank you. Mr. Baca?
The biggest thing the city can do immediately to help small businesses is reduce city spending so we can reduce the gross receipts tax rate. That means the city needs to stop spending money and mooching off small business owners. That means the city needs to stop spending money on $50,000 statues that cost $5,000 to move. They need to stop spending money on $30,000 crosswalks. And they also need to stop spending money on $20,000 toilets like my opponent to my left chose to do downtown. Thank you.
Councillor Benton.
Yeah, the toilet was very popular with the small businesses downtown, so we're planning to get that installed shortly at the city library. I saw no effect of minimum wages, gross receipts tax, and sick leave on my small business. These are the costs of doing business. So that introductory part of the question I disagree with. Due to economies of scale, however, yes, it's true that a small business disproportionately is affected by fees and regular reporting that's required to various parts of government. And I think what we ought to be doing is looking at smaller businesses getting a break on their renewal schedules for licensure and so forth, and lowering fee scales, slightly tipping the scale in favor of small business. And of course, we need to continue to improve what we're doing at our Economic Development Department with technical and small business assistance to startups, and encourage people to not only buy local, but buy startup.
Mr. Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Walls. Three things. So I think when it comes to improving small business infrastructure here in our city, we need to make it easier for people to start small businesses. I can't tell you how difficult it is just to want to get a business license online, and we don't actually have that here with our city. So, one. Two, we need to be able to build a better financial infrastructure here locally in our city. That means including more community development finance institutions to provide better access to capital for folks to not only start up, but also sustain and thrive. And third, make it easier to work with our city. There is this really great ride-sharing app called Elo. Anyone ever use it? It's local. It's awesome. And they cannot, for the life of them, get into the contract for the airport because Lyft and Uber have that contract. And wouldn't you rather have a local business, a local technology company that was working with our city?